I'm Justin Simeon, and on this week's Don't At Me, I'm talking to star of Atlanta and Deadpool 2, Zazie Bates, and boy, is it a conversation you don't want to miss. Okay, guys, you're in for a treat, as am I, because I just met Zazie.
Zazie or Zazie?
You know what, Zazie, I'm going to be like a little insecure for the first...
That's totally okay.
15 minutes. It's fine. But you know her, because if you're like me, she's your favorite part of Atlanta. You're my favorite part of Atlanta, and I love that show. There's a lot of favorite... There's a lot of things to love, but when it's a Van episode, I'm like super in. And also, I have to say... For real, and it's not because you're here. You can ask my boyfriend behind you. Mm-hmm. You're our favorite part of Deadpool as well. Like, I'm
kind
of obsessed with you.
You're also
a cat person.
I'm definitely a cat person. And we have young Miss Coco.
How old is Coco?
You know, we think she's two, but homegirl was on the street. We just picked her up.
On the streets.
And we were like, girl, you need to change your life.
You need to change it. And oh my God, y'all got her off the streets, literally?
Literally. She was on the corner. She was doing her hustle. We were like, girl, this is not for you.
And so
we got her. And so the vet has placed her. I think she is now around two.
Okay.
I think she might be a little bit older.
She has a touch of that feral up in her.
She does, but she has adjusted.
Yeah, she's like, this is the only life I ever wanted to live.
Yeah.
Well, I'm obsessed with Coco as well. Any Hoosians, I didn't know. I mean, I found out about you through Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But what were you doing before then? Like, how did we get to know you?
What was I doing before then? I was working at the Grey Dog in New York, if anybody is in
What's the Grey Dog? I'm not familiar.
It's like upscale American sort
okay.
of, you
okay.
know.
Okay.
It's just, it's a little spot. That was my 9-to-5. I was a server, and then the year I booked Atlanta was the year I was able to quit my day job.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And had you been acting before?
I was acting non-professionally for most of my life, but I got an agent in 2014, and 2015 I booked Atlanta, so it was really quick. It was like a very fast introduction into sort of the depths of this industry, which has been a huge adjustment, you know, for me and my partner, because we've been dating essentially the same amount of time that I've been kind of working professionally.
Wow.
And so we've both been kind of, I don't know how else to say, sort of like moved by this entire experience.
Girl,
but
I get it.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it! ! Because me and Rick also met like right after my movie went to Sundance.
Dear White People, yeah.
And so we met literally right before I was doing this for a living.
Like, by the way, I love Tessa.
Oh my God, isn't she the best?
She's just lovely.
See, what I love about the two, and I'm going to compare the two of you, and not because y'all are both really cute, light skinned actresses, but because you both really, I mean, I'm just meeting you now, but you both have a very genuine quality. Like, you know when there's
people... I feel that way about you, too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
But you know when there's people and you see them on TV or whatever, and you're like, I bet they're an asshole role.
Yeah.
I bet. The two of you are really exactly how you would hope...
You'd be.
I mean, it's real though. It's
yeah.
like I really, you know, I want to hang out with you when I see you on screen, and I want to hang out with you in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you? So you talked about like there was an adjustment. I want to talk about that because I also had that adjustment.
I want to know what that was like for you too.
Yeah.
And
also, this industry is crazy. It's nuts.
I sort of perceive it as like, I still have my private internal life that's like happening within me and within my kind of nuclear situation.
Yes.
And then there's all this white noise around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, within my own life, I'm like, I still got shit to figure out. Like, my ass hasn't done the dishes. Like, my ass needs to feed Coco. I'm like, you know, or
the
just,
cat is howling.
You know, or even
I can't
just
relate to that at all. Rick, stop looking at me.
Somebody told us, we're like, you need at 6 a.m. to get like one of the timed feeders because at 5 something, she's always talking to us and we're like, this is not the time. But, you know, but even beyond that, like, I feel like there's a lot of also sort of internal things that I'm still trying to process that suddenly I'm considered an authority on, right? Like,
whether that's
sort of like my relationship with race or being a black woman in America or being a biracial woman in America. Or,
capital
you
B
know,
dash capital R.
Hashtag dear white people.
Uh-huh.
And like, you know, I think to suddenly have to put all of this self-exploration that we're all, you know, still a process of within ourselves, to have that be public is really difficult.
Yeah.
And I think also in general, there's sort of this culture now also of people, when they express themselves publicly, have no room to learn again. Do you know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
Like, then, oh, you're bad.
Yes.
And there's no moving. You're fired. That's it.
No. If you're
canceled.
If there's some people, okay, so there's, to me, there's a line. There's some people who I'm like, okay, you really should have known better.
I agree.
But then there's some people who, yeah, I feel like, and when I say people, I mean, Black Twitter is the part of Twitter I am most associated. It's the one that my feed is usually Black people.
Yeah.
Okay, complaining about stuff, myself included. And, and like, I feel like when somebody is famous, that's all it is. That's all that they've done so far, is they've done something well enough to become famous at it, that they have to speak perfectly on every single issue. They are irredeemable if they don't. And if there's any kind of misstep or misspeak or something from their past they once said, it's like, you know, they have to account for it. And I'm thinking, like, how many of y'all out here
have had some kind of experience where you said something stupid, or where you didn't realize, or you were still in a place of ignorance?
Like, if I, for instance, whatever group of ad executives that did not include a Black woman decided that, you know, one of the, was it Kylie Jenner? I don't even remember the girl. Handing a Pepsi to somebody.
Pepsi, yeah, that's Kendall.
Was going to end racism. Like, I would have been like, y'all, that's not a, that's probably not a wise decision. You know, so like, that to me, it's like, I wasn't even offended by it so much as I was like, who, what ad agency?
I felt bad for her. I was like, she didn't even know.
She didn't know.
Because she's, you know.
But she kind of should have known. She should have known. But I'm also kind of like, you know, I've had this, I was talking about this, when RuPaul has said some things this past year that have gotten people up in a tizzy, honey. They're upset with Ru. And I stand for RuPaul. I love RuPaul. And I felt like, oh, this is not, it's like we forgot that he got us to a point where we could have a show like Pose on TV.
Yeah.
Like, we forgot all of that history because of a couple of I just, I struggle with that. People aren't brands.
Yeah. And also, I think, you know, for him, the amount of, just because of who he is, the amount of, I feel like, prejudice he had to face within his life to just be his authentic self, right? And he should be able to, for himself, identify what that is for himself. You know what I mean? And that doesn't have to necessarily align with what Alicia thinks or with what Peter thinks.
Right.
I think he can have his own definition of what that means, and that can potentially be expanded or worked upon, but he should be allowed to have the space of, this is what it means to me.
Yeah.
Especially since he also was one of the people that created that space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to tell you a story.
Okay.
I had a conversation with Tyler Perry recently where, first of all, he's kind of the shit. Like, he called me out of the blue and just, like, poured into me as, like, a filmmaker. But, like, he wanted to know if we had beef. Sorry, Tyler, if I'm telling this story, but whatever. I think it's okay. But, like, he wanted to know if we had beef because at the beginning of my career, I mean, the first thing you see from me, like, if you just start from the beginning, is a concept trailer on the internet for Dear White People that begins with, man, fuck Tyler Perry, okay? So I can understand why he might wonder, do we have some kind of beef? And I told him, I was like, I was honest with him. I was like, when I first started, I had a lot of resentment for you, Tyler, because I felt like the only thing Black anybody wanted was that.
Yeah.
And that's not what I had to offer. And if it wasn't that, nobody wanted to hear from me.
Yeah.
And I put that resentment on him when, in fact, the resentment belongs to the people who decided that he was the only version of Black that they could market.
Yeah.
And so we talked about that. And I told him, like, a shift happened at me when the movie came out and the show began to come out, where I would be sitting in these Q&As being ripped apart for what I didn't put in the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is not a woe is me thing, but I realized, oh, this is the cost of being in the ring. Like, this is what it is. Because, frankly, I think, you know, us, but most people, I think, feel a little disenfranchised in life.
Yeah.
And when you see somebody that's doing it, your assumption, the easiest thing to do is to sit back and criticize.
Yeah.
Because you don't think you can get in that ring, too.
Yeah, and people don't realize how hard it is to just get anything made.
Oh, my God. And the compromises you have to make.
Exactly, and the compromises you have to make in order to get funding or in order to just have a team behind you.
Yeah.
It is so hard, and it's made me have so much more empathy for material that's out there. And
that may not be perfect.
Yeah.
Because you're like, okay, you know, how come that's the only dark-skinned woman? Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes, you know, you go and you try to get. Mm-hmm. You have an ideal of what you want. And then sometimes you have a day to make a decision or else you're going to run out of money. You can never make the thing. And you got to go with the person in front of you who's doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
It's just like there's so many things that go into it. It's not like we sit in a room and sort of say, these are the things that we are going to tell people to do. Like, it's not like that at all.
Yeah. I think also, how long have you been working on Dear White People? Or like, how long has that been like in your soul?
2005 was the first draft.
Wow.
In college. Yeah.
Wow.
Terrible draft. But
where
that was the first.
Where did you go to college again? I know.
I went to a school called Chapman
in
Old Town Orange, and they have an excellent film school.
That sounds.
I know. It's in Old.
Chapman. Old Town Orange.
Not only is it in Orange County, it's in Old Town Orange, honey. And when I went there, it was not as popping as it is right now. And when I tell you.
Well, I even think about like you and I existing in the industry as we do right now would not have been happening in 2005.
No.
I think definitely hit. I think a lot about sort of, you know, the generalized white market, right? Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like I hear this word a lot of like, you know, okay, right now, you know, we want to do right now what's in the moment is stories with women that's like on theme right now. Mm-hmm. That's what people want right now. Stories about like minorities, you know, like, and like curly hairs having a moment and stuff like that. And it makes me feel sort of like, okay, sort of being registered as like the generalized media, by that being sort of quote unquote, I guess the white media, I feel like they're seeing, oh, this is this moment to capitalize on this thing.
It makes you feel like a product.
It makes you feel like a product. And it makes me feel like, but this isn't a moment for me. This is for us. This is our whole lives.
The whole life.
This is our whole lives.
Yeah.
I genuinely think like, I think in 2005, I don't think I would have been cast as Domino.
Not only would you have not been cast as Domino, okay? Mm-hmm. Atlanta would not be on the air.
Atlanta would not be on the air.
None of this would be happening.
Yeah. And like, I think,
you know, we would still be relegated to corners of the industry where no one would know who we are.
And I think that conversation needs to change of like, this is the topical thing versus this is just the new additional constant of the media we are going to consume.
Because it is going to get to a point where, like, the one black girl slot in the superhero movie is not going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't already. But, like, you know, Robert Thede and I were talking about diversity. It shouldn't be called diversity. It should be called normal.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make this movie look normal. Let's cast it with America.
Yeah.
Let's have the movie look like the country, any city looks like. But by the way, you were my absolute favorite thing in Deadpool 2.
Thank you so much. And they edited it real well.
No, you were fantastic in that.
Thank you.
Really, truly.
Thank you.
All right, girl, hold on for a second. We got to take a break and be right back. You are listening to Don't At Me.
Thank you for listening to this KCRW podcast. In case you don't know us, KCRW is public radio in Los Angeles, bringing the best of NPR to Southern California. We're also known for our own brand of bold and innovative programming, evocative storytelling, taste-making music, and audio documentaries that are little movies for your ears. You can join our community to support this show and others, or make a one-time donation just to say thank you. Find out more at kcrw.com/join.
When did it happen? Was it after the first season of Atlanta? We were like, oh, shit, this industry is crazy. Was it like...
Yeah, well, I think I suddenly had this reckoning of privacy and the value of. You know, I'm kind of probably like every millennial, I have anxiety. And it was, I think, just this test of... I don't know. I don't even know how to say this. I'm even thinking of the first season of Atlanta, the weekend before I left. And I don't even know why. I think it's like a self-worth thing and, you know, who knows where that comes from. But I was so excited. But then I pictured this black cloud of, I'm going to fail. Mm. And it just felt like this black depth of mm-hmm. nothing. And I remember the weekend before, I was like crying and sobbing. And I was like, David, you don't understand. I'm going to die. I was like saying I'm going to die. And I couldn't. I think it's sort of the ultimate sort of fear of failure and having that be so public. Yeah. And then are you enough? And is your work enough? And I'm constantly striving to just do my best work. And I'll see something and be like, man, you know, I could have done this, I could have done that. But yeah. like, that's the beauty is like, you're always growing. And as long as you're always pushing to strive to grow. But then even I think being a Black woman in America and sort of within this culture now, and, you know, I think I was like, I'm entering this place also of huge responsibility, and I don't know if I can handle it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can handle being a voice, and I've been given this beautiful, beautiful opportunity and this beautiful platform, and you know, I meet all these people who are like, I started wearing my hair out because of you, and I, yep. you know, I identify with this character, I identify when you wrote about this or talked about this, and I'm like, oh my God, people are hearing me, and here I have this beautiful, precious, like, I don't, this, I don't, responsibility, I guess, for yeah, lack of a better word, and I just don't want to break it, and yeah. I want to take care of it, but I think with that kind of, I feel like I get so protective that I'm like, then I can't say anything, because I...
Well, because we have to be perfect.
We have to be perfect, yeah.
We have to be absolutely perfect. We can't fail.
Yeah.
We only have so many opportunities,
yeah.
so we can't ruin them.
Exactly.
And like you said, if we misstep... Bring in the other.
Yeah.
Bring in the next light-skinned Black woman.
Exactly.
Like, it's sort of like there's no... The degree to which you can fuck up is mm-hmm. feels a lot limited mm-hmm. compared to some of our counterparts.
And then also even understanding...
Even more
like,
so for you than me, I would say. For a Black woman, I feel like
yeah.
it's... I still at least got male privilege. I got something.
You got male privilege, but you're gay.
I'm also a homosexual. But, you know, I read straight sometimes, mm-hmm. and that lets me in certain rooms that mm-hmm. some of my friends can't get in. I mean, it's a mind fuck.
Yeah, it is. And then I think, while engaging with all of that, also still acknowledging my privilege of, again, being a biracial woman mm-hmm. and being light-skinned. And, like, I think about... There are all these other women and other men who would not get cast in the things I think I've gotten cast in because
right.
they don't read as kind of passing enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important thing to also talk about. And
that's another thing I love about you and Tessa. Y'all both talk about that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like, it, you know, sometimes that just makes a difference. If you can just acknowledge
just bringing it up, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I think I talked about this before, but I think the reason why Justin Timberlake was denied access to the cookout for a while. is when he was asked about the question, well, what do you think about being a white person who is the only one who gets to make R&B?
Mm-hmm.
Just not being able to answer that question in a way, you know, and I get it because I think he's a real artist and I feel like he maybe felt a little attacked in the moment, but
yeah.
just not being able to say, yeah, it is weird that I can make this and Black people can't. It's
yeah.
weird. And
yeah.
then move on. You know, it's sometimes that really lets people kind of just know you get it too.
Yeah.
Because we're all kind of in the system.
Yeah,
you know
we
what
are.
I mean?
Yeah, we are.
We're not really making it. We're just in it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what I love about what you said too is that Black Cloud thing you talk about. I mean, I had to go through the movie to realize I had depression. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've had it all my life. I've had mm-hmm. it probably since I was like 14 or 13.
Yeah.
And I never thought it was a real thing. I thought it was just sort of like a reason to sell pills like
yeah.
on TV or like
yeah.
be happy all the time, whatever.
Yeah.
And I just thought like, yo, when I fulfill my dream of being a filmmaker, when I can pay my bills and I have a boyfriend, I'm gonna be
mm-hmm.
fine. And then all those things happened and I couldn't get out of bed. In the
yeah,
morning.
What was like the triggering thing for you? Or it what
was,
made it, you feel?
It was after the movie, first of all, it was after the movie came out. And I remember.
Isn't that also so interesting? At the peak of your success.
Yeah.
Or at the beginning.
Yes. When it was all working.
You did a peak there.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, when it was all working.
Yes.
And that's when it rears its truth.
Because it didn't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when I got there, it would fix the feelings.
Yeah.
You know, that, I finally got what I wanted. So therefore, but none of that happened. And I remember walking by the poster, which was hanging in my apartment. First of all, it took me forever to hang it up in my apartment. I finally mm-hmm. hung up the poster in my apartment. And I looked at it and I was like, wow, I really did that. It was like
yeah.
hanging right next to, I had this closet that I made my office in my apartment on Miracle Mile. And that's where I wrote Dear White People.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hanging next to it. And I said, wow, I really did that.
Mm-hmm.
I went from that closet to something that made that poster. And that was a year and a half after it came out. That was
yeah.
the first hint of pride that I felt about the project, truly. Yeah. It had just been fear up until that point.
Yeah.
Fear that we wouldn't make enough money in the box office. Fear that I wouldn't have anything next. Fear that we wouldn't sell. Fear that blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say right now, season three of Dear White People and my second feature, probably the first time I genuinely can experience joy while I'm doing what I love.
Yeah.
It's like I've always wanted to do this, but it was very hard to experience joy.
Do you think it's because you feel like you've validated your place in the industry and now you have room to relax?
Honestly, I think part of it's to do with I've been dealing with my depression directly.
Yeah.
And for me, that's meditation, it's Buddhism, but it's also medication.
Mm-hmm.
And
me too.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I like to talk about it because it's sort of like why these things really should not be taboo for Black people to talk about.
And that's a huge thing I think in the Black community is,
well, we're supposed to deal with it.
Yeah.
That's part of what we're taught to do.
Yeah. I think a lot in Black and poor communities, it's not, it's, it's just suck it up. That's life.
You don't get to complain.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to prove that you're just as good, and that means you can't show weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, look, I just didn't think it was a real thing. I thought that you take pills and you just feel falsely happy all the time. I don't wake up and feel happy because I'm on medication. Mm-hmm. I just get to wake up above ground.
And function.
And
function. I have less. I think depression and anxiety go hand in hand, but I think I have more of an anxiety tick where I like, and this was also during my, in 2016, I had a few months that I would say were probably the worst months of my life where I was having extreme anxiety that was disrupting my everyday function.
Mm-hmm.
And my description at the time was, I feel like I'm drowning. And like, I can make the difference between I'm sad and but I'm on the boat and I'm floating, but I'm sad today versus I am drowning and this is deeper.
Yeah.
And it's not about that I'm tired or I can't get out of bed or, but I'm, it's something so much more profoundly just dark that I think people who don't experience it can never understand.
It really is a, you know, in your, well, I know in my mind that the feeling doesn't reflect what's actually happening.
Yeah.
But the feeling is much realer than anything my mind is telling me.
Yeah.
It's like, it feels like, to me, it was like feeling like I was buried alive. It felt like I was looking. I remember describing it to my therapist. It feels like I'm in a sewer, and I can see like the slits of light, you know, in the, what do you call it? Like the porthole, the manhole, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm looking up, and no one knows that I'm down in here.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, for me, the difference has been, and I have to be, first of all, I am so excited you got nominated for an Emmy. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
However, me not getting nominated for an Emmy and my show not getting nominated was one of the best things that ever happened to me because it was sort of like I cared a little bit too much about it, I think.
Yeah.
I really did. And I realized when it didn't happen how uncomfortable that was and how much of the joy of making that show it was blocking for me. And really, for me, it's been about stripping away the expectations. It's like, yeah, it is harder because I'm Black, and yeah, I do have to show and prove more, and yeah, all that stuff, but I always have to do it because I love it.
Yeah.
I always have to do it for that reason.
Yeah.
If I'm doing it because I'm trying to catch up or be like someone else or like be seen or accolades or whatever, that's not fun.
Yeah.
That's not fun. It doesn't make me feel good.
And it's about what is your truth and how are you choosing to express your truth.
Exactly. Like, I love showing up to work.
Yeah.
And working with people who love this craft as much as I do and coming up with performances and coming up with story and coming up with ways to delight people and trick people and make people think. That's the part I love. Mm-hmm. I don't love any of the rest of it. So why am I caring so much about the rest? Like, that, the whole reason I couldn't enjoy Sundance and all that is because I was so caught up.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because having kind of sort of now dipped my feet into this world, you know, huge celebrities change because everybody around them changes.
Yeah.
The way you're treated changes. I mean, even on a set, like, actors are babied, you know? Like, they bring you everything. And, like, I think in certain cases, that's maybe necessary if you have something emotional or, you know, you need to just be available.
Yeah.
But there's so many situations where you're so protected and so insulated and you just lose touch with what the reality of day-to-day life is. And I think that can change personalities. And I think that can also, you know, people are around you are telling you this is important, or you have to campaign for this, you have to do this, you have to do that, you know, campaigning for the Emmys or campaigning for an Oscar, and you get pay boosts if you like win an Oscar and
you
stuff like that.
Gifts.
And it's like, but so what's the motivation? Is the motivation art and talent and work that is worth talking about and is worth sharing, or is it about popularity?
Right.
And I think it's hard to separate yourself from that when people are telling you and bombarding you with this is important, or take branding and you have to do this magazine or that magazine, and you needing to kind of push that aside and like, and just remember what do I want, you know? And it's okay if that's what you want. And it's okay, you know, like if you're like, I like lipstick, I want to do this lipstick campaign. But you have to make sure it comes from your truth of what do you want to do.
Correct. Well, I have to say, y'all, the whole cast, first of all, I stand for Orlando So Hard. But like, what I love about y'all is like, y'all really act like y'all give a fuck. Like, y'all are very like, listen, here are our truths. Okay. Like, I don't know. Listen, I don't know what
goes into
the promotion or whatever, but I just got to say, like, there's something about that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it really, I think we're in a moment where Black people get to be frail and have issues and be complicated on TV. And that's exciting.
Yes.
But I feel like all of you guys, Donald, Brian, like the whole cast, Lakeith, you guys really do wear your humanity on your sleeves in the show and in the world. Mm. And I think, one, that's a really powerful thing for me, just personally. But it also, like, I was like, God, like, look at what they're up to. You know what I mean? Like, they're handling it in a very specific kind of stride. And I think for me, the Emmys were not about being popular or winning or whatever. It really was about having the power in my sphere to make things the way that I want to. And the funny thing was, is that in the process of campaigning for an Emmy nomination, which we did not get, I found that power in other places and in other ways. And it really didn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it really was like about the show.
Yeah.
And it was about the way the show is made and promoted. And it was about my movies. And it was those are the things that matter.
Yeah.
And the rest of it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The rest of it can be fun.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is, right? You got to do it because it's fun, not because
you have to,
so important.
Yeah, because it's fun. And because I think also as artists, you know, this is your vehicle of talking about your experience, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's through directing and writing or through acting, or if you're a painter, if you're a dancer, you know, this is your way of processing. And I think, you know, I think for me, again, sort of the adjustment into working in the industry is like, you know, it doesn't feel like high school theater where it's like you and your friends are doing something together. All of a sudden, there are all these other stakes involved.
Stakes.
And you're like, I have to be held accountable for all these other people. And, you know, all of a sudden, like, a dollar bill is hanging on, like, what my performance does or doesn't do. And I think, you know, it can be easy to confuse, well, what do they need from me versus what is just truthful, right?
Yeah.
That's hard, though. And
it
I think
is.
With Donald and I think with Atlanta, I think Donald did a really good job sort of leading with, if we don't get a second season, it's fine.
Yeah, man.
You know, and I think that it was really nice for all of us to be informed with, oh, yeah, like, he's just...
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, let's just see what happens and, like, have the organic flow. Do you think, for you with Dear White People, do you feel like you have a place where you want to end it, or, like, are you, like, excited to work on it forevermore? Are you in, like, a...
No. I mean, like you said, I've been working on it since 2005.
Yeah.
So in the interim of getting it made, I've had a lot of other ideas as well.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I've constructed in a way where it gets to be a playground.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, each season does... I mean,
so
season
fun.
Two is so different than season one.
Yeah.
And sort of the format is weird, and we kind of, like... I've made it in a way where I get to do what is inspiring to me that particular season.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, I mean, at a certain point, I have to move on and tell other stories. And if the audience wants more of Dear White People, well, that's great. But that doesn't mean that I have to have my hand in the clay every single day.
Yeah.
I think in my mind, I see where Sam, Lionel, Troy, and Coco, that sort of core group, I see where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's all these other characters that people really love.
Yeah.
And so, there might be a baton pass, y'all, or it might just have to end. I don't know. But I know that I'm making a movie now, and I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
And I know that when I finish that, I'm going to want to make another movie, and I'm going to want to make another show. I just have other stuff going on in my mind. And getting it out is more fun and more enjoyable and more important to me than, appeasing everyone who is gathered around one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, to answer your question, I really don't know where I'm done. I'm not done yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
I still have stories to tell in that world. And, you know, as long as it doesn't kill me, I'm going to keep trying to do them all at once. I don't know, girl. That may not work. We're going to see.
We'll see.
I'm doing podcast. I'm doing too much. But, you know, as I'm having fun. And it took me a while to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to go with it for now.
Yeah.
How good. About you? Are you having fun yet?
I'm having fun. I go in and out.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm having fun. I think the biggest transition into me having fun has been practicing gratitude. And I think for me, that was a pretty...
I have been lacking in my gratitude journal. Thank you for saying that.
Right. You know, yeah. That was a pretty transformative kind of realization.
It really works.
Grateful. You know what? Even me and David, our asses were in a junket. We were like, the fuck? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know what? Pause. Hold on. All our room service is getting paid for.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, all these tickets are paid for. We're in London. Like, why am I, let me focus on the gratitude.
Yes.
And that, in all respects, has been incredibly healing.
You know what I just read? I was reading Codependency No More.
Oh my God, my grandma gave me that book.
Oh, well, shout out to grandma. Well, I was reading the sequel. She wrote a sequel to it. Anyway, point is, I was reading one of her books, and she said, her gratitude journal, she put a twist on it that I love, which is write the things that you're grateful for, and write the things that you can't fucking stand right now, that you cannot bear, and then claim that you're grateful for those things too.
Ooh.
And it really... Even though you think you're like, yeah, okay, that's a cute idea. When you actually do it, there's a brain wire that you can feel attached.
Yes.
Truly. And you start to realize, oh my God, there's so many things that I hated that produced wonderful results.
Yes.
Just given time.
Yes.
And I wouldn't want my life any other way. But at the time, I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
So now, if I give gratitude to the things that I really absolutely hate... Maybe not all of them going to work out, but if, say, 65% of them end up somewhere good or higher, I enjoyed that part of my life.
Yes.
As opposed to worried and stressed out over things that I had no control over.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I do this every day, but I really should because it works. It's helpful.
It really does work. I think it's also amazing and probably, I feel like probably people with mental health might also have a little bit more of a connection to some, to like a feeling of, oh, your brain also can change, or like your mind can be changed. Like there are a lot of things that I feel like I used to think or do where I'm like, I'm never going to change. That's just the way I am.
Yeah.
And you really, really can genuinely, from the inside out, change how you think and change how you approach something.
Well, now they've even figured out, and this is actually going to lead me to a really cute segue, so bear with me, everyone. But... now they figured out that you can actually change your gene expression. So if they've scientifically seen it happen where, like, say, you know, you
have it's crazy.
Where, like, you know, if you have, let's say you're prone to anxiety, depression, whatever it might be, and it's genetically you are predisposed
to
something.
Is it like through deep breathing or something?
No,
like
that? No, but just if you do that rewiring work, whether that's meditation, gratitude journal, therapy, whatever that thing is for you, your genes reflect your conscious intentions and decisions at a certain point. Now, listen, you can't turn yourself into an elephant or something. Yeah. I'm not saying that. But, like, the genes that are responsible for our emotions are far more malleable than we ever thought.
Well, they also talk about how, like, genetic trauma is...
You pass it on.
You pass it on.
Epigenetics, yeah. But it works the other way. It works in the same way that your gene expression can pass trauma on.
Yeah.
You can pass things like gratitude and positive thinking and excitement. You can actually do it the other way too. It's harder.
Yeah.
But it's possible.
It's possible. That's really cool.
Okay. So here's my segue.
Okay.
You ready for it? I feel like the most change I've endured in my life happened when I began my relationship.
Me too.
Do you feel that way too?
I do. Well, it's a giant mirror.
It's, girl. I'd be so mad at Rick for shit I do all the time.
I know. Me too.
All right. So, listen, next week we're going to bring our bays on.
Are y'all ready?
Our white bays. Everyone, this is the most controversial conversation ever. Slash is going to be cute, too.
I'm excited.
Me too. Don't at me, Justin's a C. Did I say it right?
Beautiful.
Zussie Beats. Whew, I would love to thank Zussie Bates, producer Gina Delvac. Special thanks to Vishnu Vallabhaneni, our production engineers Sean O'Brien and Ray Warner, head of programming Gary Scott, of course Chris Bowers, who created our theme song. This is Don't At Me with Justin Simeon, and now that the show's over, at all you want, just please, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen, and leave us a review. It really helps. We will be back next week with another episode of Don't At Me from the one and only KCRW.
Hey guys, it's Cheyenne Davis. You may know me from MTV's Teen Mom OG or Think Loud Crew podcast. I'm here with my dad, Papa Floyd, to tell you about our new podcast, Unfiltered Kitchen.
The kitchen is the hub of the household for many of us. The one-stop shop for conversations both big and small. Cheyenne and I have been having open conversations about all aspects of life in our kitchen since well before she was able to see over the counter.
And now we're inviting you into our own kitchen as a part of the family.
Unfiltered Kitchen is a two-way street. I share my advice on cocktails, cooking, parenting, and the lessons I've learned.
And I inform my dad what it's like to raise kids today, how generational barriers affect us, and the joys of being a daughter. Well, your daughter.
Get ready for a whole lot of unfiltered advice. You can take it or leave it, but you're never going to leave this table feeling hungry for more.
Listen to Unfiltered Kitchen wherever you get your podcasts.